Esabi. Ukhona uNkulunkulu.
Wabuya sa.
Yeah. All right. Babu Sam, you right?
I would add my bound and go.
Ikhona. Mamzibula niyaphila. Alright. Kuhle. Kuhle. Alright. So Sintombi put Ben, are we good to go?
Yes, the person.
Alright. Perfect. Thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity to welcome your colleagues to our meeting this morning on the briefing by National Treasury on expansions and deviations for quarters 1, 2, and 3. Of the current financial year. It is a lot of work that we're going to have to get through this morning. National Treasury, it's 9:30. Let's see how far you go, and we'll assess maybe by 10:30. And then we will, so that members then can post questions. If you're not done, we'll reassess then, because we must be mindful of the fact that the debate on the State of the Nation address that's delivered by the President on Thursday evening is being debated this afternoon. So we will have to sort of move with a particular speed without, of course, losing the essence of the salient points and the salient facts. In preparation for the hearings that the committee will have to schedule. Babu Liz and Babu Somyo, you will receive responses to your correspondence to me by the end of the day today. And then there is a letter that will be circulated to you, a colleague, the response to the call for an open tender process from the Department of Health. Minister Mkhize has responded to that quite positively. Members will receive that letter as well today. So there's a lot of reading, and then we will take important decisions then. What we will then do, maybe tomorrow morning, we will take decisions on those matters before the meeting with the SIU starts. So let me welcome National Treasury this morning, who will be briefing us. I'm advised that the Director General is held up with the budget preparatory meetings, which have been scheduled for this whole week, as the budget speech is scheduled for next week. So I think that the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer is here, but we'll hand over to National Treasury, and then they will indicate to us who is here, and then take us through the briefing. Colleagues, on that note, good morning and welcome to this meeting. National Treasury, over to you.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members and colleagues, and all protocols observed. You are right, Chairperson. You have with you this morning the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. I am Estelle Sitan, the current Acting Chief Procurement Officer. Then with me, I have my chief directors, Basani Dekker, Mulefi Fani. I have with me Mpol Tomalu, and then a couple of, and then also Balakile Ngalu and Tumelu Nklava. They're all chief directors within the chief procurement officer. And then I also have a couple of the directors within the Governance, Monitoring and Compliance Unit that is responsible for this task that we are briefing you on today. So I am very cognizant.
Before you proceed, I'm sorry about that, before you get into the salient point, how long have you been acting?
Chair, I've been acting since January last year, just before the lockdown. So I went through some tough times in the last year. So, but I'm still here and I'm still surviving.
Well, this vacancy has been vacant for quite a while.
Yes, yeah, it's been vacant for quite a while, and I know that at SCOF last week this was raised, and I am sure that they will start the process. As far as I know, they have interviewed, but they did not find a suitable candidate in July last year. So they are, I think they're going to go into a headhunting process going forward.
No, that's fine. Colleagues, I think we do need to take this up because at every material point when we're dealing with the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, we are confronted with this perennial headache. And it is quite frankly now in breach of the law. You can't be having this elongated non-filling of the vacancy of such an important task. But yes, nonetheless, because Mayor Sitani, you have been there for the full, for the purposes of the briefing, the financial year under presentation today, so that is perfectly fine for today. But I think this is something we're going to need to take up. It's totally unacceptable. The National Treasury is dropping the ball here because this vacancy has been vacant for the longest of time. All right. Fine, colleagues. If you can just note that and we'll see how we take it forward. And if SCOF is dealing with it, we'll monitor it as well. Right. Acting Chief Procurement Officer, over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to go through the briefing for the quarter 1-3 deviations and expansions. So it is the first three quarters of this financial year. We'll talk a little bit about the legislative basis, some definitions, looking at deviations, contract modifications, and then some of the common reasons for these deviations and modifications, and some trends and observations, and some operational challenges when we get to that point. So, Chairperson and honourable members, our legislative basis for these deviations and expansions comes from Treasury Regulation 16A6.4, which talks where it is impractical to invite specific competitive bids. An accounting officer or an accounting authority may procure goods and services by other means, provided that the reasons for deviating from the competitive bids are recorded and approved by the accounting officer. Further to that, in 2007-08, a practice note 8 was issued where it expands a little bit more on this, where they say that if it is impractical to invite competitive bids in cases such as urgent or emergency cases, or in the case of a sole supplier, the accounting officer may procure goods and services by other means, such as negotiations or quotations. And the reasons for the deviation from inviting these competitive bids should be recorded and should be reported within 10 days to the relevant Treasury and to the Auditor General for any procurement above 1 million. If they procured in terms of Treasury Regulation 16A6.4. And then in 2016-17, another instruction was issued where it gave a little bit more information around what is considered an emergency procurement. Emergency procurement can be invoked when there is an immediate risk to health, life, property, or the environment, and when there is insufficient time for an agency to invite competitive bids. And then for sole source procurement, it may only occur when there is evidence that only one supplier can provide this unique service. Any other deviation will then be allowed subject to prior written approval from the relevant Treasury, and that is in relation to deviations from normal competitive bidding processes. Then in the case of expansions and variations, accounting officers or accounting authorities can approve variations of contracts if it is within 20% or 20 million of the original contract value in terms of construction-related goods and or 15% or 15 million if it's for other goods and services. Any deviation or any expansion in excess of these thresholds must be in exceptional cases and is subject to prior written approval from the relevant treasury. So in terms of some definitions, if we talk about extension of contracts or purchase order, and usually it's contracts, this means that the duration of the existing contract is affected, and this may or may not have a financial implication. Sometimes it's just time and no implication on finances, and it does not include the alteration of the scope of the contract. An expansion of the scope of the contract is if there is an alteration to the original scope of the contract. In other words, the works differ from the original contract requirement. It is additional to the original scope or the bill of quantities. And then variation of contracts and purchase orders. Variations are more prevalent in purchase orders where a purchase order has already been approved or generated. However, the quoted amount is exceeded upon receipt of the services. And just a simple example of this is that if a workshop is organized for 20 people and eventually 50 people attend, that would be a variation on the purchase order. So I'm going to go into the statistics of the deviations. Firstly, each quarter on its own, and we can look at some of the reasons for these deviation requests. And firstly, I'll just show the quarter on quarter deviation, and you can see in terms of value, quarter one was 10 billion, quarter two, 75 billion, quarter three, 10 billion again. So this spike in quarter two, which we can go into detail a little bit later, is mostly quarter two, the spike in quarter two is mostly attributed to about 8 applications from Eskom to the value of about 68.7 billion. And the biggest of that was the renegotiation of the coal supply by South 32 to the value of 66.9 billion. But this application was not supported, and we can go into the details. The number of deviations stayed quite stable with a slight increase in quarter three. So if we go into quarter one, and Chairperson, honourable members, we are concentrating here on the top 20 applicants in terms of the value of their applications. And we're doing that because in all cases, the top 20 applicants make up more than 95% of the value of the applications. So in quarter one, you will see the biggest contributor here is Department of Higher Education, and that is attributed to about 3.7 billion for the procurement of laptops to students, which was also not supported. Then the second largest was for the police, which was reporting on PPE procurement of 1.2 billion. The third largest is Eskom. Various applications, and the largest was for the manufacture, supply, and delivery of air heater spares to Arno, Grootvlei, Kriel, Engina, and Duva. So I'm just going to show the top three contributors from 3.7 billion right down to 60 million. In quarter two, as I already alluded to, the largest contributor in quarter two was basically attributed to one deviation request from Eskom for the renegotiation of the coal supply to procure coal to the value of about 66 or 68.7 billion. The second largest at 2.3 billion was a request from Transnet for the supply of refined fuel to the value of about 2.1 billion. In quarter three, the largest contributor here was Department of Health, and this is attributed to the deviation request to participate in the COVID-19 Vaccine Global Access Facility, the COVAX facility, to the value of 4.2 billion. PRASA was the second largest contributor for technical assistance for PRASA for the condition assessment, rehabilitation and maintenance of network, and 902 million for private security services. The detail of these applications are in the spreadsheets that was provided, as well as the individual responses that was provided to the committee. So this was in terms of the values for each quarter. In terms of the numbers, in quarter one, the top 20 applicants had 86 applications, and you can see the number of applications per institution. You can see that Eskom, SABC, the human HDA, this is not HAD, this is HDA, Housing Development Agency. So they all have 9, then going down to SAPS, Post Office, Public Works and Infrastructure, and so on, going down. So that was 86 in quarter one of the top 20. Quarter two, 85 on the top 20. Again, at the top you will see Sandbox, Denel, Police and Eskom at the top. Quarter three, you will see Department of Environmental, Environment, Fisheries and Forestry, Public Works and Infrastructure, Eskom, and the UIF at 89 for the top 20 applicants. So, Chairperson, in terms of these deviations, not all these deviations are always supported. So this just gives us the statistics in terms of the value. Let me just do this. In terms of the value and the number of applications that are supported or not supported, the table at the bottom and then the two graphs, that is just a representation of the statistics. So in total, 86 applications contributed 9.7 billion, of which the highest was not supported, which is 21 applications was not supported, 21 were supported with conditions, and then another 22 were supported. Quite a few were just for PPE procurement for noting, and then two was within the accounting officer's mandate to approve. Then the same you would see in quarter two, where 85 applications contributed 75 billion, of which 11, let's just see, 38 applications were not supported. Included in this figure was the one from Eskom for the coal supply. In quarter three, 9.9 billion in total of 89 applications, of which 33 were supported conditionally, 11 were supported, 21 was not supported, one was in the mandate of the accounting officer, and 21 was for noting. The next three slides are basically just the table format of the documents or the graphs that you have just seen. And just to indicate, honorable members, is that the top 20 is listed in the top part of the table according to their value. And then the rest is made up of other government institutions. And this, the top 20, in this case, makes up 97% of the total value of deviations. In quarter two, we jumped to 75 billion. That you can see is attributed to Eskom, of which a large chunk we did not support. This makes up 99.7% of the total deviations for quarter two. Quarter three, the same. We came down again to 9.9 billion. In total, 10.5 billion, and the top 20 applicants make up 95% of the total value of the deviations. So, honourable members, that was the deviations. I'm going to follow the same process for contract modifications, contract expansions. Again, you will see that there was quite a huge jump in the second quarter in terms of the value. And this, if we go into the detail, the spike in quarter two is attributed to about 21 applications from Eskom to the value of 29.1 billion. And the largest expansion of this 29.1 billion was for the turbine generator at the Medupi Power Station at 13.4 billion. In terms of the number of expansions, it came down in terms of the number, and it increased in quarter three. And the reason, and the main reason for this, honourable members, during quarter two, the National Treasury had issued a couple of instructions around emergency procurement and the expansion of contracts, and the fact that we discouraged government departments not to issue new tenders during that period. So the number of applications that we received for the expansion and extension of contracts have been increased during quarter two and quarter three. If we look at the top 20 applicants in quarter one, again, Eskom is the largest contributor with 19 applications at the value of 879.8 million. And the biggest chunk is 268 million for the construction of miscellaneous structures at the Kusile Power Station, and 212.9 million for the maintenance of air heaters and draft plan fans and spare parts. Transnet at 600 million, it's the second largest contributor, and this was for the supply of refined petroleum fuel. And then Department of Basic Education was the third largest at 540 million for the installation of mobile toilets at selected schools as part of the COVID-19 emergency situation. Quarter two, again, Eskom dominating this area in quarter two. And this is attributed to 21 applications. And as I already said, it was for the turbine generator at the Medupi Power Station and the supply of coal to Kusile Power Station and other power stations to the value of about 9.9 billion. Quarter three, the largest contributor again is Eskom. 21 applications to the value of about 1.98 billion. And the largest of this 1.98 billion is for the supply, transportation, erection, and dismantling of scaffolding and insulation material at 551 million. The supply and delivery of coal to Kusile Power Station and other Eskom power stations at 309 million. Quarter one, we had 25 applications from EDTP CETA, 19 from Eskom, 7 from SARS, and so we go down, and a total of 83 for the top 20 applicants. Quarter two, 79 applications, of which Eskom had 21, SARS 11, Sunrail 11, and so we go down. Third quarter, again Eskom at 21 applications, SARS at 8, and EDTP CETA at 8. In terms of what was supported and not supported, in terms of value, 35% was supported, 38% conditionally supported, and then 26% not supported. In terms of the number, 42 supported, 19 conditionally supported, 19 not supported, and 3 for noting for quarter one. Quarter two, similarly, conditional support at 96% and the balance is not supported or small portions supported. In terms of the number, 34 supported, 25% conditionally supported, and 19 not supported. Quarter three, 36 were conditionally supported, 29 supported, and 12 not supported. And you can see the values on the left side. That conditionally supported was 22.5 billion, supported 1.4 billion, not supported 287 million. So again, this is just the tables for each of the quarter, and in all cases, you will again see that the top 20 applicants in each of the quarters are more than 95% of the total modifications that was received in that quarter. In this case, 96.6%, quarter two, 99.7%, and in quarter three, 96%. So now to get into some of the common reasons for deviations and expansions. In the last three quarters, we saw that sole suppliers and or single source deviations came through quite a lot, especially for OEMs and from our state-owned enterprises or state-owned companies. Few came through for closed bidding processes, business continuity, and also in our SOCs, especially in Transnet and in Eskom, they came to Treasury for business strategy or operational purposes, especially with regards to their turnaround strategies. There were a couple that spoke about urgency, where they did not have enough time to issue new bids. The extensions of current contracts due to new tender processes not being able to be completed in time. And that was mostly attributed to the lockdown where bidding processes could not proceed as planned. Failed tender processes, in other words, no tender was awarded or no service providers were recommended and tender process had to restart. Value for money also came through on quite a few. Accommodation leases or the extension of accommodation leases was another reason. We find that quite a lot of reasons relate to the extension of existing software and the use of existing software and licensing of software, and especially with our SOCs where they are busy with large projects, and by its nature, all these projects are multi-million, billion rand worth of contracts and projects, and most of their applications will fall within or will exceed the 20% or the 20 million threshold. And that is why Eskom and Transnet is so prevalent in these contract modifications and deviations. Then there's quite a few on government-to-government procurement, especially around use of GTAC and the CSIR, and then expansion of scope in terms of time and material. We have noticed some trends in the last three quarters, and that there's an increase in the departure from the competitive bidding process, and it can be for various reasons, and I think the most prevalent reason is due to COVID. The continuous modifications of contracts that keeps the same service provider that we need to keep an eye on. There's an increase in order disputes. There obviously was an increase in the compliance reviews related to PPE from the Fusion Center. I think if I'm not mistaken, there's probably around 80 investigations that the National Treasury is assisting with. Some accounting officers or authorities procure through deviation, even though the Treasury has declined such deviations. Poor procurement planning, and in a lot of cases, poor contract management. Poor implementation of projects, leading to either the contract expansion or single source deviation. Poor governance structures, non-implementation of consequence management on officials that causes irregular expenditure. Chairperson, I don't really want to go through the operational challenges. It is mostly related to the fact that we are managing this process manually and we are in the process of automating the submission of deviations and expansions, which Tumelo's team is busy with to assist us with just internal operationalizing the accept and status of each of these requests. What we also find quite a lot is that departments or institutions, when they apply for these deviations and expansions, that they do not or they are not always very honest with the information that they supply, or they are limiting the information So it is a back and forth to probe and ask the questions in order for us to assess it properly. There's also an increase in the investigations due to the inappropriate use and implementation of emergency procurement procedures. And there we are assisting the Fusion Centre or their law enforcement agencies, such as the Hawks, SIU and Public Protector, for assisting them in the procurement part of these investigations. Chairperson, I think that was the presentation in terms of the statistics and some of the trends and observations, as well as some of the common reasons for the deviations and expansions. And I think this will allow some time for the members to maybe ask questions around specifics that they might need answers on. And that is where I will pause. Thank you, Chair.
All right. No, thank you very much for that, Acting CPO. Colleagues, I've seen Honorable Van Meenen has already indicated that she would like to raise questions. Maybe let's do that. Give her time to pause and then come to the next member. Please indicate as per our ritual in terms of you requesting to speak. And then Honorable Swartz, you will follow. All right, Honorable Van Meenen, over to you.
Thanks. I think the screen is still up. What I really want to know, thanks very much, everybody, the large volume of deviations and expansions seems to be dominated by a couple of SOEs, in particularly ESCOM. I just want to know, how does that compare in this financial year to previous financial years? Are we seeing an increase in this? And the reason for that, I mean, would that be the new management team? Would that be the turnaround strategy? What is, it can't only be the COVID issues. I mean, we all know what's been happening with ESCOM and with load shedding and issues with a number of the power stations and electricity supply. Then in terms of the coal for Kusile, I mean, that's an ongoing issue. I don't know whether Treasury can add any details to that. If you can't, I mean, we can take that up subsequently with ESCOM. And then what happens when the deviations and expansions are not reported? And the final question really is, well, I think it's connected to what I asked earlier, is why does it appear that their financial planning has required so many deviations and expansions this year? Thank you very much.
Okay, let's get a response to that. And then Honorable Swartz will come in, Honorable Lees and Honorable Mente.
Right. Thank you, Chair.
All right, sure.
I'll attempt to answer the quarter three to quarter three comparison. I did do a comparison between 2019-20 and the 2020-21 comparison in terms of the numbers. And the numbers are very comparable. There's no definite or alarming number of deviations. And also in terms of the values in quarter three is not that different. I unfortunately did not do a comparison between quarter twos, between the two quarter twos, and I think just from what we've seen in this presentation is that there are definite increase in the quarter two in terms of the value. And those can be attributed to some single transactions or single deviations, such as the ESCOM, some of the ESCOM applications. So, Chair, I unfortunately did not do a quarter on quarter for all the quarters, and I do have the statistics, if you allow me to look for it, in terms of quarter three. To quarter three, I know that I did that comparison. I just cannot find that specific information. I don't know, Bassani, do you want to maybe add or answer the second or the other questions?
Thank you, Estelle. Good afternoon, Chair, and good afternoon to honourable members. Apologies, it's actually still the morning. I could add by saying, Chairperson, that the application for deviations by SOEs has always been in the high, even in comparison to prior years. But this year in particular, we could say that it is attributable to quite a number of factors. One of them, it is the fact that there is a turnaround strategy that the SOEs are implementing, in particular Eskom and Transnet. But there's also issues that are related to procurement that we have identified together with the SOEs, that roadmaps had been put in place to resolve those issues. For example, in Eskom, we had identified that tendering was an issue. So if you look at the number of cancellation of tenders by Eskom are quite high. And when you cancel a tender while the contract expiry is almost approaching, you sort of don't have any other choice but to extend the contract to keep the service or the supply of the good that you require while you go out on tender for the second time. But we've also seen certain contracts that had expired previously that the SOEs would come back and for continuity and request for single source deviation to reappoint the service providers. And unfortunately, Chair, in cases where you find that the applications were not supported, it goes back to the accounting authority and the accounting officers to make a determination on what is the best way to move forward. We do make considerations when we receive the applications to look at issues of service delivery, but in cases where you find that contract extension or expansions or even deviations cannot be supported, it's cases where you find that management has to go back to the drawing board and look at what is, again, the best approach for procurement and do the right thing, Chairperson. So I think in that I would answer, that's how I would answer the question. Thank you.
All right, Honourable Van Meenen, are you fine with those responses?
I answer now, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Colleagues and National Treasury, we are requested by Parliamentary Communication Services, TV and visual, that we turn on our cameras if we are on the platform. We are being streamed on Parliament's platform. Honourable Sot, good morning and over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I've got a little bit of a network problem, so I will not switch on my...
Okay, no, I remember. Okay, so that's fine.
There is a worrying trend that there are more deviations which are not supported by National Treasury, but departments proceed with them even though there is no support from National Treasury. So mine would be, what powers does National Treasury have in cases where departments and entities proceed with contracts which have not been approved by National Treasury? Thank you, Chair.
All right, ACPO.
Thank you, Chair. In this case, we do monitor those. They are not that many, but we do monitor them, and where they do deviate, even though we declined, this will obviously result in incurring irregular expenditure, which they will have to then request for condonations in the end, and which they will have to go through a very rigorous process of doing the assessments on who caused and what caused, and if they lost money in the in if there's any criminality involved. So the process that follows afterwards in terms of requesting for condemnation for irregular expenditure is much more arduous than just requesting and doing the right thing in the beginning. So the Bassani's team, being the governance, monitoring and compliance unit, do follow up on these, and where we do find that we declined applications and they continued, we would then intervene. So I think, Bassani, if I have not represented you well, you can add to that as well.
No, I think you have said it well, Estelle. I think, Chairperson, I'm trying to find the video. Oh, there we go. I think what is important to know, Chairperson, is that as the Treasury, we don't have the powers to take any action further to monitoring when we have not approved a particular deviation. However, we work hand in hand and very closely with the Auditor General, where when we find that institutions have gone ahead and implemented a deviation that we did not support, we report directly to the Auditor General. And when the Auditor General audits them, the particular institution, they would then audit that deviation as well and declare it irregular if the institution cannot provide evidence that National Treasury has in fact approved that deviation. And as Estelle said, then the irregular expenditure framework then kicks in at that point in time, and issues of consequence management and investigations for any criminal element or any losses to the state really kicks in. And if there's any criminality or losses to the state that have been identified, Chairperson, the process is that the monies must then be recovered. However, if you find that there was no criminality, but there was non-compliance that has been caused, the accounting officer has the task, according to the PFMA, to take a disciplinary action against the people who would have caused the irregular expenditure, then that is when we would consider for condonation. Thank you, Chair.
I'm going to process this momentarily. I'm Honorable Swartz, are you fine?
Hey, Chair. Good to see my it's a difficult thing, but what else can we say, Chair? If they're saying they don't have powers, they then wait. It means that we actually wait for people to first do the wrong thing and wait for the Auditor General. By the time everything is messed up, it's a very long process, Chair, but I will say I'm fine, even though I'm not fine, Chair. Thank you.
All right. Now, we will look at that. Colleagues, also please do apply your minds. Otherwise, to an extent, it renders applications for expansions or deviations as a cosmetic exercise, really, which, yeah. And that's what probably gives rise then to it being continuously being a norm as opposed to being an exception, as we've seen. Something's got to give, and I think we're going to need to, yeah. All right, Honorable Liz, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning to everyone. Honorable Schwartz raises a critical issue. When Parliament established the Central Procurement Office for the first time ever about 7 years ago, it was kind of perceived that it would be a bit of a silver bullet for the considerable amount of corruption that has since been exposed in the Zondo Commission and simply carries on even in the PPE procurement that's taken place over the last year. It's not fulfilling the role that many people thought it would, and it certainly is to some extent a consequence of it being established in a way that was without any teeth. And Bassani has gone through that just now. Kenneth Bowen left as the Chief Procurement Officer in December 2016. That's 4 years ago. And whilst there might have been competent people in the acting position, as I'm sure Estelle is, it is not a workable solution to have people acting for 4 years and more in a critical, critical function such as this. This is an indication of the lack of importance, perhaps, that this central procurement office is perceived by those who should be putting it at a very much more prominent position. And so it's really a question to Estelle, who's been acting Chief Procurement Officer for about a year, as I understand it, and has probably, Estelle, you've been around for the duration of the office, perhaps you can confirm or that, but someone who has considerable experience in that office, who would need to give us some guidance about why this new institution, because it is new, it's only ever had one full-time procurement officer, being Kenneth Bowen, has not been able to deal really robustly with the high levels of corruption that we have seen in the procurement, state procurement of goods and services. So it's a question about what kind of action we as Parliament should be taking to ensure that the Central Procurement Office fulfills the role that we intended when we passed that legislation. That legislation was one of the few times there were details that we differed on, but the whole concept was a unanimous concept of Parliament. So it's not like there's opposition or open and opposition to the office, but clearly there seems to be a lack of commitment, and therefore perhaps more stringent powers need to be introduced. So that would be my question to Estelle. Bassani has very, very clearly laid out the process, and by the time the Auditor General gets to it and the irregular expenditure is declared, the people involved have long since moved on, taken up jobs in other departments, etc., etc. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Muhammad. Right, National Treasury.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the question, Honourable Member Lees. This is quite a difficult question to answer. I have been around since the establishment of the office, and the intention of the office as it was established was to increase or improve on the accountability or the to improve in the supply chain management of government. The issue around giving the National Treasury or the OCPO teeth is being covered in the new Public Procurement Bill, where we are establishing the regulator to have more teeth, so that we can have that we can intervene where, or that we have the intervention powers to intervene then, but currently as it stands in terms of our legislation, we do not have those powers and we are dependent on our law enforcement agencies and the Auditor General, where we do come across these acts of corruption, that we intervene immediately and also work closely, very closely with the Auditor General to get to a point where we can actually stop it before it actually happens, but it's at the moment not always the case. And I think also the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer in its original intention is not achieving what it was intended to do when it was set up.
Honourable Liz, are you fine with that response?
Mr. Chairman, I think it confirms the concerns that we all have, that were expressed by Honourable Schwartz and yourself. It's something that we need to assist the process with. It's what I'm suggesting, Mr. Chairman, it's not just about looking at the individual deviations and so on, which are now becoming so historical. There's a much bigger structural problem here or issue to be dealt with. And I'm really pleased that we're all seeing it the same way, including Estelle and others. So I think we could probably move forward quite consensually as to perhaps how we can deal with it. Because it is very distressing. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Now, colleagues, I think what we'll have to do is have an engagement with Parliament Legal to actually close this lacuna. It just doesn't sit well. To the Acting Chief Procurement Officer, if your team so long can just pull up the list and schedule, if you have it, which you should, of the departments or entities that proceeded with implementing deviations and expansions, even though National Treasury had not approved them. I think that's important for us to see where the problem lies, because it may also begin to explain why such a cause of action may be taking place, in which spaces, in which spheres. So if you can pull that so long for us. Right, Honourable Mente, over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everyone. Chair, I only have two concerns. First concern is you just took the words firstly out of my mouth in terms of the list of those that have neglected in the directive from the Office of CPO. But I just want us to quickly, deeply think about the issues that we find ourselves in, and in particular now the era we are in with the pandemic and the opportunity thereof that presented itself to those that are unscrupulous. Now, if you remember, Chair, we dealt with a very difficult situation when it came to grants in the previous parliament, where a court had to rule that grants should be paid by a company, even though that particular company was deemed unfit to be dealing with the matter, simply because of the grants being the human rights issue and that people had to receive grants for them to survive. Now I see as a Chief Procurement Officer Earlier on your presentation, you indicated on the higher education being the highest with ESCOM on the deviation. And immediately after that, you mentioned that it was the issue of laptops that they asked a deviation for. And given the fact that now we're in the pandemic, and by the time they did that, the laptops were necessary so that students could not be stopped from the learning process, and we allow the schooling to happen, even though it has to be happening on the wires through having all the necessary gadgets. Now there's two things. The basis of you rejecting the deviation was either based on two things, as you mentioned later on the observations. There was no value for money, but there's always value for money when kids have to learn. Or the procurement in itself was not according to the regulations of treasury in terms of pricing. I would like you to use that example and explain to us, when it comes to an issue of a human right, and in cases of such nature that kids cannot be denied education, however chief procurement office can stand as a stumbling block and not give it, not unfairly, but give us the reasons why would you reject such, and how should it be done correctly? And what were your observations? I also noticed that you gave guidance when necessary on how they should go about doing the proper process in terms of procurement so that you could allow such a deviation. The second concern I have is the matter that was raised, where you gave conditional support for deviation. So it means that on condition that they adhere and comply to certain standards or submit certain documentation that was not part of it. You also indicate that you were dealing with these processes manually. Then I began to worry. If you give in a permission conditionally, yet it's done manually, and you are still devising a plan of automating the system, how are you then monitoring that such conditions at the current moment? And how far is the automation of the system, so that you can be up to speed in monitoring and stop where the looting is then identified? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. To the Chief Procurement Officer, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regards to the Department of Higher Education, procurement process was then conducted by NSFAS, taken over by NSFAS and not DHET, not Higher Education. So we denied it at DHET, but that function was then proceeded with by the NSFAS, and as far as I know that they are in the, that they have already identified the preferred bidders, so that is not a process that was halted altogether. It was just taken over by NSFAS, which I think the reasons that they provided was that they are closer to the students than the higher education. It was laptops for students that are on the scheme at NSFAS and not for all students, as far as my knowledge goes. And in terms of the conditional support, I think the Basani might be able to provide reasons why conditions are usually given. And as you rightfully said, it is usually based on either that they have to ensure that it is cost effective and that there's value for money, or that certain aspects of the tender process must be adhered to. But there are various reasons that we usually put in place when we give the conditions. And as you say, the automation will definitely assist us with the follow-ups and the continuous monitoring and to ensure that these conditions are complied with. The automation, we appointed a service provider late last year, and they are busy with the development of that system where departments would be able to log their requests onto the portal, where they would be able to assess and track the status of their requests right throughout until the end. So that we hope to have that system in place in the new financial year, or at least in the first quarter of the new financial year.
Honorable Mente, are you fine with that?
No, Chair. I want to...
You want to proceed?
There's just one element that she did not respond to as to what measure do they use currently to monitor those that have been given conditions, and if they adhere to those particular conditions, and if not, how do they stop then the procurement? Thank you.
ACPO?
Thank you very much. At the moment, we have specific people dealing with specific institutions. And where we do find that there's a trend that we continuously give conditions, we address it specifically with the department to understand why they are not providing us with information that we always have to provide conditions to these applications. But it is difficult for us at the moment to monitor, as we would want to, honourable member. At the moment, I think it is very much an administrative burden for us, which does not help us with the monitoring, and that is something that we do need to improve on.
All right, honourable Mente.
I would leave it to you, Chair. It's tied to the two previous colleagues, because it's indeed the frustrating monitoring tool that is just not there. Because the synchronization of CPO and AG with the law enforcement agencies is not necessarily something that we can use to stop, because it's a practice or it's a method used after the act. We are looking for a method to stop the act and monitor the act. So if there's nothing currently, it means that it has to be tied to what you are going to seek in terms of the legal office of parliament to advise us how do we then go about ensuring that there is a monitoring tool for CPO, that even though people are given conditions or they have never been given a permission for a procurement, but they still go ahead. So it's more or less the same thing. Thank you.
Okay. May I just pose a few questions myself, whilst members prepare? We seem as if we have a short meeting today.
I have a question, Chair. I've seen my hand.
All right, Babuso, you may proceed. My apologies. My apologies. Over to you, Babu.
We're using the gadget
Why are you deviating now from the established practice of the COVID? You see these deviations. Okay, Baba, you may proceed.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I think members have somewhat voiced their frustration with the kind of mainly the end of the stick, how it relate to achieving the end goal, because the procurement office is supposed to be acting in the first instance as a deterrent for those who act wrongly in as far as the procurement process is concerned. When the controls break loose at various centers of procuring for services, it would have been this office that would firmly insist that some consequence management should be seen to be pursued from the first quarter as you receive the report or when the occurrence is in a particular quarter. That kind of a follow-on is somewhat observed. If you are going to leave things to happen, what's the use? You see, you are reporting to us first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, and whatever quarter. Here there is a somewhat rolling performance on the wrong side of the required process of procuring such services. And you then rely on referrals that is referred to the Auditor General, referred to this and that, the accounting officers would have to account on ABCD. Why the failure, you see, on the mark, you see, as people spend, knowing very well that this expenditure has been on the wrong side of the procurement system. And that lies on your capability to stop the rot. If you can't do so, why then these kinds? Why then this whole thing of making these assessments, making this information available, and there's no way that you're going to act on this kind of information. And therefore, Chair, it really gets into the perennial nature of a declaration of some of these expenditures as either a wasteful expenditure or fruitless one way or the other. And that then becomes the after effect. And there are huge sums of money are spent in this kind of way where people have to create justification of frivolous expenditures on these matters. Look into these state-owned entities. You can talk about your turnaround strategy. Why are you turning around an institution? If you don't have a plan, the results are going to be like this. If you have a plan, there's no way that you create an expense which is a fall foul in terms of the procurement system. The thing that you know that my life is about coal with ESCOM. You see, my life is about coal. All my blood would have to sweat this a kind of coal. Why do you have to then get into expenses which are somewhat have questionable processes on something that you know you must have? It then tells you about the actual capacity that these institutions have to plan for the expense that they are going to show at the end of the day. So consequence management ought to be that which is required, even on the Treasury side, because it stands with Treasury to authorize such delegations to those who are supposed to perform. So the failure by Treasury to insist that these things should form part of the performance of those who are in authority should not be seen lighter. It's not a failure of legislation. It's not an absence of that legislation. It's not an absence of regulations. Regulations are there. So the procurement office can't cry as if it does not have an angle which it could hold people accountable for these kinds of things? Why does that office exist, if that is the case? Thank you very much, Chair.
All right. So let's get a reaction to that, and then Mrs. Bafani, you can come in as well. And then Honorable Swartz will follow on.
Chairperson, I will ask Bafani to give her opinion. Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I believe that, this goes very much hand in hand with the balance between the powers that the accounting officers and the accounting authorities are given by the PFMA, as well as the role of the National Treasury, because currently and legally, currently the role and the mandate of the OCPO falls within the role that is legislated within the PFMA. And it becomes quite important for us that we do not overstep, and impede on the responsibility that the accounting officers and the accounting authorities have been granted by the PFMA. And you will see then, Chairperson, that quite a lot of these procurements, they happen within the department, where the accounting officers and the accounting authorities have to make the decision to procure for the purposes of service delivery. And quite many of times we find ourselves in a position where we have to consider service delivery. Similarly to the question that was posed earlier on to say, Treasury, when you are faced with a request like the Department of Higher Education that requires you to consider the basic human rights, but also consider the fact that the procurement has to be done within the ambit of the law, although in a manner that does not break the rights of people. What do you do? We consider the risks that are associated with this procurement. And if I were to use the example that the Honorable Member used of the Department of Higher Education, where you have to do an emergency procurement of laptop because education must continue, when you think about value for money, you also consider whether once the process has been done and the appointments have been awarded and laptops are delivered, will they serve the purpose? Is there a strategy for the department to allocate and manage the use of this laptop such that they will serve their intended purposes? And those are the kind of risks and concerns that we raise to departments to say, colleagues, before we can even implement emergency procedures or deviations, you must make sure that your procurement will serve its intended purposes. Chairperson, what I also think is important, especially around the issue of monitoring, what we do is that on a quarterly basis, the institutions send a procurement report on a quarterly basis for all the procurement that they would have done above 500,000 for that quarter. And that is where we pick up, because remember, we also receive procurement plans. So when we monitor the procurement plans against the procurement reports, we can see the procurement that was done according to the procurement plan. We can also see the procurement that has been done that was not part of the procurement plan that also did not go through the normal tender processes. And we ask the departments the right questions. We request them to submit documents. And where we find material irregularities, we do write back to the accounting officers and the accounting authorities to declare that particular procurement as non-compliant and therefore irregular, and make recommendations whether it be considered to cancel the contract or whatever the case that may be. We do communicate to the accounting officers. And I think at that point, we then allow the accounting officers their powers as given by the PFMA to make the right decision and do what they are tasked to do. In the absence of it, then we expect that then the consequence management, as Honorable Somyo alluded to, would then take effect, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
All right. I'm hearing that. Okay. Honorable Swartz, you've got a follow-up. Oh, Babu Somyo, are you fine with that response?
I'm fine. You see, the outlook is begging towards Treasury to be a bit frontal in dealing with these matters. Because when you receive a report, the report gets to yourself for you to execute your mandate appropriately, following the receipt and the analogy of what is contained in that kind of a report. So whether is it a matter of advice or is it a matter of insistence that the accounting officers ought to do something about those matters identified as not even agreed along by the procurement office. It really fly against the face of the procurement office. You say no, they continue, and you still await a particular process to look into the assessment, reassessment, when they make an appeal in that kind of a process. And you look into how in the South African procurement system, we have somewhat behaved in terms of dealing with these matters. It's really what Treasury must up its own game around the area of perusing the documentary proof, which would allow to enforce the consequences on these matters. Thank you, Chair.
All right, Honorable Swartz, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Indaba lena inzima lena, because when we listen to all the English that is being said by Treasury over deviations, it's very sad, Chair, because for any ordinary person, ngesintu nje singasho ukuthi the PMFMA Act imote tshontsha imali for the accounting officers, because they know that Treasury won't have that much of a say but to write English to them, while deviation means that they've implemented a wrong thing in the process. But mine, Chair, was to ask this question. The EGDP CETA also had a number of applications for deviations. My question is, what was the procurement for on these deviations, Chair? Thank you.
All right, let's get a response from National Treasury.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just quickly have a look in the present or in the spreadsheets. Sani, unless you have it at hand.
I'm checking for it as well.
Okay, the it was in give us a moment, please, Chair, forgive us for this.
No. Let's rather get the information, no problem.
I think it was under the expansions. Yes, it was the expansions in quarter one. So let me quickly have a look. Yeah, there was 25 applications from the Education, Training and Development Practices CETA. 24 was to the value of 13 million. So let me just get to the actual BB. Okay. Education, Training and Development Practices CETA. There were a couple for cleaning services in the various provinces. So there was one for head office Eastern Cape, Western Cape, Northern Cape, Gauteng, KZN, Limpopo, Free State and Northwest. Those were for cleaning services. There was also, I think the largest one was head office and provincial offices lease of multifunctional photocopy services, and that was 1.4 million. And then lease of office space in the various provinces. Another one was for records and information management, document warehousing at 2.2 million. And then the largest one, Chair, was for network services, information security and telephone services to the value of 5.5 million. So in the information can be seen in the expansions quarter one spreadsheets. So there are a couple that contributed to the number of applications. Although not high, relatively high in value, it is quite a few, like 25 applications.
Okay, follow up. Honorable Swartz. Honorable Swartz, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Chair.
All right,
Chair,
over to
you. I'm just saying that out of all these responses we got now on the deviations of the ETDP CETA, surely it must be very poor planning for a department to realize that a contract is going to end, Chair. So, and the amounts that has been given, that, I mean, even if we have deviations for photocopying, it's something else, Chair. And that is why I think all other members, what we can't really get into our system is that you have such deviations, but when you actually dissect the deviations as to what it was exactly for, it even become more scary. Because if a department does not know when their cleaning contract will end and end up taking it with deviations, it's, we don't know what to say, Chair, but there's a problem. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, no, there is. You're quite right. I think CPO, there was do you have that schedule of those who went ahead to implement with while even though you had not granted them the go ahead?
Chairperson, we did not specifically do that analysis, but we will certainly do that and share it with the committee. If that is okay with you.
All right, no, that's fine. I think I just want to go back to something that Honorable Lees raised earlier on, because I think he raises a very fundamental point insofar as whether you, the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, is being taken seriously. I mean, I'm summarizing quite loosely, but it takes me to this. What is your vacancy rate as things stand now?
Our vacancy rate is quite high at the moment, Chairperson, but we are in various stages of appointing people in
Let's unpack high.
If I am just thinking at the top of my head, there are at least about 7 that I know that is vacant, but we are also in the process of requesting additional resources for the GMC unit. But obviously, we are doing that within the budget constraints. Chair, I can give you the vacancy schedule as well. But I think at the various, in the various departments, the various chief directorates, there are about 7, if I'm not mistaken, that is vacant and in the process of either advertising or...
I just think it's such a salient point. Colleagues will correct me if I'm wrong. But I think there is merit in us receiving that information. Now, it should be readily available, really. You can pull it up insofar as what your establishment should have, your organogram. So this is 7 of how many vacancies, how many people should be there, and where are the vacancies? Because I just think it goes to the heart as to whether we can have any confidence in the effective functionality and efficiency of your office to deal with the issues that it must deal with, and whether you are receiving the necessary support, whether the capacity is there to deal with it. This is not a reflection on you. This is something when I have to take up with the Director General, actually, of National Treasury, because you yourself, of course, are in an acting position, and so we understand your dilemma in this regard, and that's why I posed the question earlier. But I think that we should be privy to what is the situation currently, So if these are, say, I mean, of course, you're subject to correction, 7 vacant positions at chief director level, we would want to know how long those positions have been vacant. Yeah, so I think let's pull that out, because it's at the heart of the broader issues that have been raised. So, Honourable, I'm just building on the issue that you raised, which is, where are we, and the issues that colleagues have raised now, insofar as follow through and follow up on matters. So that's just the first point. And I'm going to come to a suggestion, colleagues, on the issue that emanated out of Honourable Swartz's question about powers and functions, insofar as this is concerned. But I think let's drill into this of the vacancies.
Yes, Chairperson, with regards to the vacancy rate at chief director level, we only have all the chief director positions are filled at the moment. The chief director's strategic procurement is currently managed by Balekile, who is acting on my behalf in that portfolio. And then the other one is Mpho Nomalu, who is acting chief director in policy and legal on behalf of Mr. Willie Matabula, who is currently seconded to CRASA. So the chief directorate positions are all filled. The vacancies are in the director and the deputy director areas. And as you would know, those are the people that we rely on quite heavily to do the work in terms of the footwork and responding and reading and assessing the deviations and preparing responses for the chief directors and the directors to assess and give guidance. So, Chairperson, what I can do is I am talking about the vacancy rate with regards to funded positions, but there are obviously quite a few positions that are vacant and unfunded. And that detail I can get from our HR unit to give you the specifics instead of trying to give you information that might not be accurate at the moment.
It's just, I don't know, it just doesn't inspire particular confidence, really. But it's fine, we will get that and we'll follow it up, as I've said. Unless there are any other questions on that issue I'm raising, colleagues, we can then move on. I'd like to make a suggestion on that issue that has been raised of what happens if people proceed. Colleagues, are you fine? All right. I would like to see. Somehow, something just doesn't sit well with me, as it doesn't sit well with you, colleagues. The issue of a lacuna, that you're right. If we don't approve, you can, in one, unofficially, people can just proceed and we will wait for the AG at some point. That can't be right. So I think, like I was suggesting earlier, let us get legal to assist us look at that. And for the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer and National Treasury to make suggestions as well to us on this critical matter, because I doubt that they feel it's desirable themselves, nor is it correct. That there's this challenge, it's not desirable at all. So if we can get your thinking on this matter in the next 14 days. And colleagues, I want to suggest that in the interim, whilst we embark on this process, National Treasury, any deviation or expansion that you reject, if it may, be communicated to us simultaneously as it is communicated to the ones that have made the application, so that we can begin a tracking mechanism here of these things early, as opposed to us. Because what we're trying to do is to do real-time oversight. One of the public accusations is that we're a scoper, but in terms of the rules, really, largely is that we come in at the tail end, but there's nothing that prevents us from looking at matters as and when they happen. So as you communicate your decision or your determination on a request for an expansion or a deviation, I think that it's only correct that we get it simultaneously. And then it will be incumbent on us as a committee on how we want to process that and how we want to monitor that. If it means we call in those who are making the request and is for them to explain how they then proceed to move forward, so that we've got that on record. But they can't be an over, it can't be a freeway per se. You know, that like an autobahn kind of thing, which you are at your own whims. And then colleagues, once we have engaged with legal, we will be able to devise a framework on this. But I think in the interim, let us be served with that information so that we then determine what to write. Entity X, National Treasury Station, how do you plan to move all those things on record? Because I think that it's left to their own whims. There's a kind of flexibility. It's not binding. But they have to be able to detail a roadmap on how they, whether it's an appeal or whatever it is, and if they're going to proceed, we need to be privy to that early on so we can make determinations. It worries me. So I hope, colleagues, that stopgap measure for now will help us look at these things. And then when we've received the schedule, we will of the vacancies, and we'll take this matter up. I think we need a meeting with the PG as a matter of urgency, because our outlook is a functional office of the Chief Procurement Office. We want it to function effectively and efficiently, and it needs to be fully resourced with the necessary skills, knowledge, and expertise and resources. The issues that have been raised here, they in themselves may be the reason why things are falling through the cracks, because entities and departments know that it does not enjoy, because in my view, you are not enjoying the full support of National Treasury. And that's very dangerous. So National Treasury, DG and his team need to play ball with this office. So I think whilst understanding that there's the big budget next week, we'll do that. The final issue I want to raise, colleagues, is the NSFAS matter is a serious one. We have received also communication from colleagues, some who are wanting us to engage with NSFAS. We are looking at that and trying to find a date as a matter of urgency, so that we are privy to the state of financial health or unhealth of NSFAS ahead of students returning to institutions of higher learning and training across the country. And so the issue of the laptops is one of those that we must actually look at. We last met with the administrator, who spoke in glowing terms and promised us heaven and earth and the universe beyond any imaginable parameters. Well, the rest is history, that from there things just went downhill with that administrator, and literally NSFAS is back on its knees. And so we need to follow up on that engagement. And so we will just have to try and maneuver and engage with them as a matter of urgency. We will communicate with colleagues. So that is a matter that will receive the committee's attention. But colleagues, in the absence of any other hand, I'll check the group and Babu Somyu's deviation from established procedure. And if there are no hands, I'd like to thank colleagues, thank the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer and her team who have briefed us this morning. And of course, I think we will have to focus, colleagues, on ESCOM, because the coal matter remains a perennial headache at ESCOM. And so if they now were in Kutu applying for a deviation of about 68 billion rands, increasing substantially the value of requests that National Treasury had to deal with, it speaks to an ESCOM that has to appear before us. The ESCOM is a problem. They're a problem child. And I don't know what sheer miracle we now need for things. If it's not load shedding, it's expansions and deviations, it's complaints and grudges. There's a fundamental problem at ESCOM, and we'll have to apply our minds and use our imagination as a committee on how we deal with those things. All right, colleagues, if there's no other matter because if National Treasury can just pull up, there was a note I made here earlier on, deviation number 74, whose turnover does National Treasury, whose turnover, in quarter one, can we just...
Chair, through you. Estelle, you want to proceed?
I think, continue, Bassani, thank you.
I'm just reminded of that because I was particularly interested in the details of that. National Treasury?
Chair, turnover is it's a request that ESCOM had approached National Treasury for a deviation, I think around quarter one of the deviation. Particularly, Tenova was a service provider that was appointed as a subcontractor in the contract for critical works at the Camden New Ash Dam project and the Majuba Rail project. And the appointment, Tenova was a subcontractor that was dealing with the designs of the of what they call a coal tippler, takeout conveyor. So at the time, I think the takeout conveyor caught fire, and that created an emergency situation for ESCOM. Therefore, an emergency was declared because they could not move coal from the mine to ESCOM. As a result, ESCOM at that time negotiated a sort of a new scope or a change in scope to redesign a part of the coal tippler sometime, I think, in between 2018 and 2019. But the contract since lapsed between ESCOM and the main contractor, and ESCOM then came to Treasury for a single source deviation. However, at National Treasury at that time, we did not support the deviation in itself. However, ESCOM came back to Treasury at some point in time, citing that this project and the contract was critical to them, and they would go ahead and appoint a turnover, which National Treasury then responded to. But subsequently, Chair, I think later in the year, supported a request because of the criticality of the project to Eskom's operations, if the contract is with conditions to say if the contract is not irregular, and if the contract is cost effective. However, Chair, there were some issues that had led us not to support the contract in the very first place, Chair. So I'll leave it there. I don't know if Estelle has anything else to add.
Chairperson, I don't have anything to add in terms of the information that Bassani had given, except that at the end we supported the deviation, as Bassani had said, in terms of criticality and the issue that it might contribute to additional load shedding. And we also looked at value for money in terms of, or the impact of not supporting the deviation versus supporting it in terms of service delivery and the continuation of the service.
Yeah, that's precisely it. I raised that issue in the context, colleagues, of saying, see, when things are rejected, we need to then understand the roadmap moving forward, because now then there's a subsequent approval. In my view, that contract is irregular. I doubt that Eskom would have remained, you know, without procuring services elsewhere. And so that is why that point of turning down an expansion or deviation becomes of critical importance, because it sets into motion another plan or another outlook, which, if not pulled out of the shadows, lands us in this kind of towing and froing and the approval of contracts in a manner which is questionable. So I was just raising that because it stuck out, ukuthi there's a back and forth which sort of just is on the blind spot per se. So let us, yeah, colleagues, I think we will look at that one as well. And if need to table any resolutions, colleagues, we will circulate them tonight or tomorrow, and members can have a look, and if possible, you can approve them tomorrow. So I'd like to thank you very much, colleagues. So National Treasury, when we call Eskom or any other entity, we will call on you to be present on that meeting so far as that meeting you can be present in those meetings rather of expansions and deviations. But I think it may be prudent, colleagues, that we start with Eskom with that huge amount of 68.8 billion rands that they had requested in quarter two, and of course looking at Tenova and others. Because here I get a sense that there was double payments for the same services that Eskom would have already received, but they pushed for it. So we'll look at that. Colleagues, I'd like to thank you very much. Mr. Chan and your team from National Treasury, specifically the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, we thank you very much this morning for the presentation and understand all our questions to be in the spirit of trying to help you. So that you can be able to perform your duties and functions and be an enabler to our oversight as well. But you also need to shape up yourselves and build up your capabilities and call on us whenever you need help for anything. And we would like to receive that outstanding information on those two things, on your vacancy rates, amongst others, and on the schedule of those that proceeded to implement despite you saying no by Friday close of business, and then of course the response to how we close the lacuna in that matter within 14 days as well. So I think, colleagues, we can leave it at that. Mayor Stell and your team, Thank you very much, and we wish you all the best as you prepare for the budget. Make it a good one for the people. And we hope to see you soon. Colleagues, the House will sit at 2 this afternoon for the SONA debate. And so it's good that we've got an early day so members can prepare for that as well. In the absence of any other hand or comment, may I declare the meeting adjourned. Going once, going twice, going thrice.
Thank you, Chair.
Take care, colleagues. Have a good afternoon.
Of course, Chairman.
Thank you, Chair.